West Lafayette Public Library Director Nick Schinkel reviews the book Starboard Sea, a novel by Amber Dermott. It's a powerful first novel about life and death, friendship and love, as one young man must navigate the depths of his emotions. Schinkel begins by reading from the book.
On the morning I turned 18, instead of a birthday present, my father tossed me the keys to his car and informed me that I was finally man enough to captain his Cadillac. It was early August. I was doomed to trade the final blaze of summer for the first days of school. Dad kept the engine running while I half-assed my way through packing, racing around our apartment, stuffing boxer shorts and sport coats into duffel bags. Instead of helping me, Dad ordered our ancient doorman, Max, to ferry my luggage to the car. In his navy wool uniform, all epaulets, gold tassels, and brass stars, his kind face glistening with sweat, Max looked like the commander of a sinking ship. I told him not to worry, but Max was adamant. "Okay," I said, "but leave the heavy stuff to me." More than anything, I hated being waited on, but I didn't want to cause trouble for Max. We rode the elevator to the lobby, and I told him, "For wearing that getup in this heat, you deserve hazard pay." "Don't worry about me," Max said. "I get paid to look this pretty." Max helped me load the car and wished me good luck. "It's your senior year," he said. "Enjoy yourself." My mother was still on vacation in Maine. It occurred to me that the only soul in all of New York City I would miss would be my doorman. "Take care, boss," I said, and slid into the driver's seat. So opens Starboard Sea, a first novel, and one of those rare and exciting finds. For Starboard Sea marvelously captures both the brittleness of youth culture and the soon-to-be wanting-to-be adult personality, the bravado and the inner doubts. It's set in an East Coast boarding school once we get out of Manhattan, populated largely by rich misfits, adolescents who have been dismissed from other elite schools due to any number of antisocial or vaguely criminal behavior. The students themselves acknowledge their tenuous educational situation and respond with a mixture of last chance desperation and acceptance of their fate as disappointments to their most often distant parents, making for a population of young people with nothing to lose and much to regret. Into this sputteringly tense environment comes our lead character, Jason, a young man of wealth and privilege who is dismissed from his elite school after the suicide of his roommate. Jason's own developing character has been and is shaped by distant parents and by that suicide of his roommate, Cal, who was also Jason's best friend since childhood. Throw in, as our author does, a herky-jerky budding romance with a troubled young woman whose love for the sea parallels Jason's own. And as the chapters float by, we struggle with Jason as he tries to bond with the rougher side of his new residence, Bellingham, with a clutch of teenage young men who disdain anyone not of their wealth and soon-to-be social status, who see their co-ed neighbors and townie laborers as equally worthy of disuse and dismissive behavior. Attitudes and behavior that Jason finds uncomfortable, but tempting to embrace, for both the brotherhood bonding and the sense of superiority such rich male-centric behavior offers. The Starboard Sea beautifully captures that seaside culture of what we want to think of as the traditional East Coast boarding school, even one meant for teenage screw-ups. The sea-salted winds, the tourist-centered boardwalk of the nearby small town, the stark and quiet beauty of the land contrasted with the sometimes harsh anger and after-hurricane devastation of the seaside world in which our story is set. Well, the very title, The Starboard Sea, leads one to looking back. And as the story is told by Jason, a senior reflecting back continually to a past that is darkened by suicide by his longtime best friend and sailing buddy Cal, Jason blames himself for causing his best friend's death. And yet, instead of lifting himself from his personal depth of despair, he re-befriends those sometimes friends from his and Cal's boarding school past. Friends who were certainly not exactly kind to Cal and Jason in their common past. The same sometime friends from Jason's past who were certainly not accepting, much less kind, to Chester, the African-American tennis whiz, a quiet and lonely student whom Jason secretly befriends at his new school. Much as he clings to the past in his public friendships, as our story unfolds, we see Jason slowly breaking out of his self-imposed isolation, founded on the guilt he feels for Cal's death. He begins a halting romance with another emotionally damaged student, Aiden, a young woman whose mother is the dictionary definition of an L.A. actress mother. Distant, self-absorbed, Aiden has grown up in a household in which her life's choices and actions were largely her own, undeterred by the adult guidance she so yearns to have. Far from her home, Jason offers Aiden the emotional anchor she has long sought. And emotional stunting aside, Aiden and Jason reach out to each other in a sometimes bitter but often sweet fumbling of adolescent romance. Jason ultimately shares his deepest anxieties and guilt with Aiden, and she opens her damaged soul to him. Inspired by Aiden's loving spirit, Jason slowly revivifies his passion for sailing on the open sea and re-identifies with his boyhood love of sailing at his new boarding school. So it is that our story builds a new head of steam as Jason is all too soon devastated once again by the supposed suicide and certainly the death of his soulmate Aiden. And Jason comes to the conclusion that his new refound friends from his former school were at least complicit, if not implicit, in Aiden's suicidal drowning in the sea not far from one of those friends' seaside mansion. Jason's guilt over the death of his best friend Cal comes rushing back as he realizes Aiden died the very night Jason was playing hooky from school, driving through a vicious early spring storm, the hurricane referred to earlier, with his errant older brother. And so Jason takes it upon himself to delve into the murky niche world of rich boy boarding school shenanigans, once again befriending his distant buddies and joining the racing team led by the boy he feels was most critical to Aiden's death. Teaming up with the proto-J Crew teen race to inveigle himself into race and his buddies' confidence in order to get at the truth, Jason fears yet yearns to learn. As our story ends, Jason does indeed learn the bitter truth about not only Cal's, but also now Aiden's death, and learns that indeed his new old friends were indeed not all they themselves think they are cracked up to be. But lest I leave you thinking that this novel ends on a down note, let me dissuade you from that feeling. This is ultimately an uplifting and life-giving kind of novel. Let's end by giving you a taste of that ending from The Starboard Sea. We join Jason as he is taking leave at the end of his senior year of this place in which so much had happened and so much he wished had happened could have been, as Jason tells us. I found myself near the once forested area where we'd had the groundbreaking for Prosper Hall. Somewhere there was a picture of my father and me smiling our ceremonial smiles as our shovels cut the earth for the new building. Trees had been cleared, construction begun, the dimensions of the new dormitories made clear with cement and rebar. I wondered who would live in those quarters, boys or girls. Would there be a fire escape, or would the windows be sealed to prevent anyone from sneaking in or out? I'd never really thought about having children, but any son or daughter of mine would be a legacy at Bellingham, his boarding school, would have a home named after him or her, a home born of a father's desire to hide his son's shame. Just one last time, just to say goodbye, I walked down to our beach. As I trudged across the familiar sand, I stripped off my suit, leaving my clothes on the shore, and dove into the cold Atlantic. The wind was picking up. I wanted to sail under shadowed constellations. Aiden and Cal, my fellow privateers, two of them giving off more light, more warmth than I deserved. Cal would teach Aiden how to work the lines, her red hair fiery in the moon glow. She would whisper to Cal how sorry I was, convince him to forgive me. It was only because of Aiden that I had begun to forgive myself, only because of Cal that I had learned to care for Aiden, the three of us part of some larger whole. I wanted to swim until the dark water and navy sky were one. I felt myself rising, soaring away from this school, hunting the sky for yachts. The tide was coming in, the waves gaining strength, but I felt buoyant, triumphant even. I ducked my head underwater, held my breath, lengthening the keel of my body. Swimming closer to the rocks, I heard the waves and wind creating their own siren song, the soft voices of my lost friends. I flipped over, floating on my back and leaning into the starboard sea, the night descending, stretching above me like a map of promising instruction, of direction. I would spend the rest of my life searching for guiding stars. It's a very moving book, a very honest and real look at teenage life, and a very honest and real look at emotions. The Starboard Sea, a first novel and a good one, by Amber Dermont. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.
That was West Lafayette Public Library Director Nick Schinkel. He's reviewed Starboard Sea, a novel. You can find more book reviews by Nick Schinkel on our website at wbaa.org.